seated.
The next case is Long Distance International Incorporated versus Telefonos de Mexico. Justice Hankinson is recused, and the court is now ready to hear oral argument from petitioners.
May it please the court, petitioners will be represented by Mr. Randall A. Pullman, who has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. My name is Randy Pullman. It's a pleasure to be here this morning in front of you, and it's an honor to represent my clients, Long Distance International and Star Marketing Services. This court, I think, is faced with a question of first impression. At least that's what the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals tells us. And the question is, when a foreign law comes in a shade of gray that is not black and is not white, what is the summary judgment standard that a trial court must implement in order to determine if that law should be enforced under the laws of the state of Texas? To put this in perspective, to put it back into Texas law, it is my belief that there are three kinds of contracts in Texas. There's a legal contract. There's a contract, for example, Justice Abbott, if I were to buy your watch for $10. We make that agreement. That contract is legal. There's no reason that it cannot be enforced. There's a second type of contract, a contract that would be called malum prohibitum, which is a contract that may violate some law out there, but that law does not go to protect the health and the safety of the citizenry. Those kinds of contracts are not void. Those kinds of contracts are voidable. The third type of contract in Texas law, I believe, is a contract that violates a law that is malum in se. A contract that violates a law that is malum in se is a contract intended for a purpose that violates a law. The law is created for the purpose of protecting the public health and safety. For example, a contract for slavery, malum in se. We know that that's void. A contract for prostitution, for drug running, any of the kinds of things that the penal statutes protect, we know are malum in se, and those kinds of contracts absolutely cannot be enforced by the parties that made the contract. They cannot be interfered with. It doesn't make a distinction. It doesn't matter whether it's an enforcement action or an interference action. This case, of course, is an interference action. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, in a case with very similar facts, I'm sure the justices are familiar with it, Access Telecommunications, Inc. versus Telmex. In that case, the Fifth Circuit looked at Mexican law and said what my client was doing was perfectly legal in Texas and in Mexico. For that, because it was legal, we don't get to the questions of can it be enforced or can it be interfered with. The fourth court below, Justice Hardberger writing, simply missed the issue. He did not distinguish between contracts that are legal, contracts that are malum prohibitum, and contracts that are malum in se. What the defendants have argued for the past 4, 5, 6 years we've been litigating this case is that this contract that my client had to perform services in Mexico by bringing up international long-distance service over an 800 number, those are illegal and that's the end of the inquiry. It simply is not.
Wait a minute. Are you arguing that you can perform services in Mexico, and if Mexico says you can't do that, that you have a tortious interference with a contract that is performable solely in Texas? I'm misunderstanding the premise. I thought the argument was you were performing services in Texas that Mexico interfered with by something they did in Mexico, but you premised it on the comment that you have the right to perform services in Mexico.
There, the record is clear, Justice, and if you have our argument correct, that the material part of the contract was performed in Bexar County when the long-distance calls were switched. But the fact of the matter is, and the record is clear, that my client was soliciting customers in Mexico in order to originate that long-distance traffic. What the defendants are keying on, and what the Fourth Court of Appeals keyed on, was it the mere fact that you were in Mexico and somebody in Mexico says that what you were doing was illegal, is good enough. It's not. That's the first response. The second response is that the law in this case, the record in this case of Mexico law, is anything but clear. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals looked at this law and very clearly said there's nothing under Mexico law that prohibits what you were doing. The Fourth Court of Appeals, Justice Hartberger sitting, said no, under the concept of comity, we are going to defer to the Mexican national government, and therefore we are not going to enforce or allow interference with these contracts. Justice Hartberger, in the Fourth Court opinion, simply looked at the wrong law, and he got the standard for comity wrong. It's just that simple. Let me talk first about comity.
You don't need comity if it's not illegal, do you?
Now, that's correct.
Well, if you say it's not illegal, then why do you need to worry about comity?
Well, because the Fourth Court of Appeals, that was the basis upon which they affirmed the summary judgment. Justice Hartberger affirmed the summary judgment. I'm happy to skip past the issue, Judge.
Well, no, I mean, but the premise to that argument is, assuming that we're wrong and it is illegal, then we don't defer to Mexico for these reasons, I think it is your argument.
My argument is as follows. The best that Telmex and SPC can prove to this panel of justices is that the regulations that my client may be in violation of are malum prohibitum. Under Texas law, unless my client entered into his contracts with a view to violating that law, they're enforceable. And the question, with a view to violating a law, is a jury question. My client never got a jury trial. The trial judge never put the question to a fact finder. She merely took judicial notice of the laws of the state of Mexico, didn't tell us what those laws were and how they interpreted them, and entered a summary judgment. The Fourth Court of Appeals, on the basis of comity, on what I believe was a hasty analysis and a hasty decision, affirmed that.
You think with a view to means with a view to I know what Mexico law is and I don't care, I'm going to violate it, or this is what I'm going to do, I'm not sure what Mexico law is, but if it's illegal, it's illegal?
I believe that is a question that gets put to the jury.
I mean, there's no question that your client meant to do what it did.
Yes, sir.
There's just a question about whether it's illegal.
There's a question. The question is whether he did so with a view to violating Mexico law. That is the issue. That's a jury question. My client did not get a jury issue on that. He got poured out at summary judgment. There's a case out of California that I think is very instructive on this issue, and the case is Wong versus Tenneco. It's mentioned in the briefs. Mr. Wong was operating an agricultural business, a farm, in California. He decided to move to Mexico. He sat down and realized that you can't have foreign ownership of a farm in Mexico under the bright line law, Mexico law, at the time. So instead of him owning the property, he got some straw men to own it for him. The testimony was clear. Mr. Wong said, yes, I did this to circumvent Mexico law. The California Supreme Court said, you intended to violate the law. You did it with a view to violating the law. Your contract's not enforceable against Tenneco, and poured all the parties out. The difference in this case is that we don't concede that what we were doing was violative of Mexico law. We think there's a very good argument. In fact, we think it's the law that what my client was doing was legal. The Fifth Circuit has told us that. The contradiction between the Fifth Circuit decision saying that what happened was legal and the Fourth Court of Appeals decision saying it's illegal is the best evidence I have that we get a jury question on it.
If I issue securities without complying with state and federal securities laws, I just don't know what they are. Am I doing that with a view toward violating the laws or not?
The violation of the securities laws puts, I would suggest to the court, is under the top category of malum in se. Those securities laws are designed to protect the health, safety, welfare of the populace. We know, we're charged with knowledge. There's no ambiguity that you can't issue securities to more than 35 people outside the state of Texas.
Why aren't you charged with the same knowledge of whatever the law is in this respect, except for the fact that it's in Mexico. But, so there's some disagreement about it.
The first answer is, in this particular case, there's a lot of disagreement about what the law means.
But apart from the fact that there may be disagreement, if we knew it as well as the securities laws, the fact that I'm issuing securities without complying, it doesn't make any difference whether I know what section I'm violating. It's just that I'm doing what I'm not supposed to do.
Again, there's two differences. The first difference is the securities laws are malum in se, and that's discussed in the Dornberger decision out of the Southern District of New York that's in our briefing. The second issue is the securities laws are clear and unambiguous. The statutes, the regulations that are an issue in this case are anything, are only ambiguous. What happened was...
But the third issue, so I understand, the third issue is that what you're saying, and perhaps it contradicts what Justice Hecht is talking about, you're saying that unlike the securities laws that may prohibit certain action, you're saying the Mexican laws don't prohibit what you were trying to do.
It is our position that the Mexican laws do not prohibit that, and I've prepared a handout and given you a copy of the Mexican regulation that says you only have to have a concession if you own, operate, install, and conjunctive, and exploit.
Let me make sure I understand this distinction you're trying to draw. If you say the securities laws are malum in se, why aren't the Mexican laws that are intended to help the people by building the infrastructure, by granting this monopoly, I don't see the distinction there.
Because I'm not going to hurt myself by answering a telephone call. There's no inherent evil in delivering a telephone call north of the border. There is an inherent evil in the sale of securities that are unregistered.
Sure there is. You're keeping the Mexican country from developing the infrastructure for telecommunications that they want to foster by this law.
I understand what you're saying, Justice Hecht, but let me contrast that to one of the appellate court decisions that is at issue here, Ahumada versus Dow Chemical. In Ahumada, the plaintiffs sought recovery because Dow contaminated the Bay of Cartagena. I don't think I pronounced that correctly. Turns out the Colombian government and the Bolivian government had issued a regulation saying no fishing in the bay because it's contaminated. That's a health and safety issue. It's clear. You can't fish in a contaminated bay. You're going to endanger people's lives, their property. That's malum in se.
But you say securities regulation is malum in se, and I'm having a hard time drawing a securities distinction from the public purpose of building the infrastructure of the Mexican telecommunication system.
The distinction that I make on the securities laws is that I believe that they're malum in se, number one, and number two, they are clear and unambiguous, so that, Justice O'Neill, if they're not malum in se, then that means they're malum prohibitum. And if they are malum prohibitum, then a question arises, and again, if I could get your attention on a handout and a chart that we prepared, a decision tree.
Which one?
The front page, it says legality, decision tree, LDI versus, that's it. Justice Abbott. Issue one is whether the law is malum in se. Let's say that Justice O'Neill is correct, that the securities laws are not malum in se. That means they're malum prohibitum. You then come to the second issue, and that issue is, are the laws clear and unambiguous?
No, that was not my presumption. I must have stated it incorrectly. Your statement was that securities laws are malum in se.
It is my belief, my personal belief, and if you and I disagree about that...
No. Okay. Let me say I agree with you, and that therefore, on the same premise, is this law in Mexico.
And that is a question...
If I agree with your premise that the securities laws are malum in se, and that there's no difference, really, between this set of laws in Mexico and securities laws, then you would lose.
Yes, ma'am. If you make the legal decision that these regulations and laws in Mexico are malum in se, then we lose. There's no doubt about that. It's our position that they are not malum in se, that at best they are malum prohibitum. And that's the legal question that the eight of you will face, is whether the Court of Appeals was correct in holding that it was just illegal as a matter of law. What makes me feel good about my position on that, Justice O'Neill, is that the Fifth Circuit, in a very detailed opinion, looking at all of the regulations and looking at all of the reasoning behind those regulations, held that it simply wasn't illegal. So my argument to you, ma'am, would be that at best, at worst from my perspective, at best from the defendant's perspective, what they can show is that these laws were malum prohibitum.
But how much deference do we give the Mexican government's own interpretation? I understand you have some disagreement as to whether it's the Mexican government's interpretation, but let's assume that it is.
You give that. There's two answers to that question. I'm going to point you to two important cases that address that. The first case is Hartford Life versus the state of California, U.S. Supreme Court case. In that case, the U.S. Supreme Court received amicus filings and briefing from the government of Great Britain saying, we don't think you ought to rule in favor of one side. The U.S. Supreme Court said, unless the foreign government can show that there are two laws that conflict, then there is no deference owed to the foreign government. The foreign government's opinion about how its law should be interpreted is something that we can listen to, but we're not bound by it. And Justice Souter on the U.S. Supreme Court proceeded to ignore Great Britain's brief.
Well, it's one thing to say how the case is going to come out, but can't Mexico say what its own law is?
They can if they interpret it consistently, and that is the reasoning behind the Henry Amico Cadiz case out of the Seventh Circuit, Justice Head. In Henry Amico Cadiz, there was an oil spill. We all remember it 20-some-odd years ago. The government of France incurred an enormous amount of cleanup costs. They sued the private defendants to recover those costs, and there was a question about how do you interpret French law in a treaty? And if you interpreted it one way, the French government won. If you interpreted it the other way, the private defendants won. The French government came in and said, this is how we interpret it, and this is how we interpret it consistently in our own courts against our own defendants. And they gave an example of how they had interpreted it that way. The Seventh Circuit proceeded to say, okay, the French government is telling us how they interpret it. They are, as a matter of record, they are showing us that they interpret it consistently internally in France, and we're going to give that issue, we're going to give them deference. The difference here, and this is the critical difference, is that the way that these defendants are interpreting these regulations and statutes today in this court is not the same way that they have interpreted and implied them internally in Mexico. And the best example of that are what are called the International 800 agreements between Pemex and MCI. If the defendant's interpretation of these laws and if the government of Mexico and the SCT's interpretations of these laws are correct, then the International 800 agreements that Telmex signed with AT&T, with MCI, and with Sprint are void because it's the exact same service that my client purchased from MCI.
Except no, that you marketed don't. Your services in Mexico to Mexican companies.
And so did MCI. And the
is that in the record?
Yes, ma'am. It's in the... That's what's... A,
but... They didn't anticipate, the argument is that they didn't anticipate that those companies were going to do it any more than that you were going to.
And just as heck, the solution for that was, in those International 800 agreements, Telmex could have prohibited or tried to prohibit resale of those services. They didn't. That is the nut difference, and that's what the case turns on.
Well, but the argument is that they didn't think they had to prohibit something that was already against the law.
But, and you're, Justice Heck, if it was against the law, then it has to say that someplace. And here's the problem. Mr. Green and Mr. Cavey aren't going to be able to show you a Mexican regulation or statute that says resale is illegal. All they can show you are Mexican statutes and regulations that say you have to have a concession if you're going to exploit the telecommunications network. The second handout that I, the second page of the handout, is an amended concession that Telmex has. That amended concession contemplates resale. It gives Telmex the right to do so, but not the obligation. They resold these services to MCI. That was a legal transaction. When they resold it to my client, that was a legal transaction. The best arguments they can make here are arguments they should be making to a jury that my client intended to violate a statute that was malum prohibitum.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from respondents.
May it please the court, Mr. Jeff Cavey and Mr. Hubert W. Green will present argument for the respondents. They have split their time 10 and 10.
You'll give me a yellow light.
Yes,
sir. May it please this honorable court, my name is Jeff Cavey of the San Antonio firm of Clemens & Spencer on behalf of Lefnos Mexico SHCV. The issue which was presented to the trial court with respect to Mexican law, and which the trial court properly determined, and which the Court of Appeals properly determined on de novo review, and which this court, if it deems it important enough to the jurisprudence of this state to conduct the de novo review, will also determine, was what is the law of Mexico as regards the provision of international long-distance service via a 1-800 number in 1993 and 1994 during the period of Telmex's exclusive concession.
And in that regard, one of the last statements that was just made is that nothing says that the resale is illegal. Would you point us to something that demonstrates that the resale is illegal?
I will point you to the law of Mexico, which is a body of law, beginning with the 1940 law, the General Means of Communication, in which it says that no one, for any public service, can be provided in Mexico via a general means of communication which governs highways, telephone lines, radio, TV, any public service without a permit or concession. That's number one. It covers telecommunications.
On that regard.
Yes, sir.
There was nothing illegal in the Mexican law under general laws or any of this that prohibited MCI from selling 1-800 services in Mexico to, I don't know, I sell light bulbs, or I sell hardware, and I'm located in San Antonio, and I can have a 1-800 number, and MCI could get my 1-800 number into Mexico, so a person who's in Mexico wants these services could dial 1-800 and get a toll free call into the United States to order a service. Nothing prohibited that in Mexican law.
That service is not only not prohibited, it is not what the plaintiff was doing. What that service is provided under is the 1-800 agreement. Mr. Pullman is just flat wrong and misstates the record when he suggests to this court that that was resale.
No, that's legal. That's legal.
It is legal for MCI, the American carrier, pursuant to an interconnection agreement with Telmex and a 1-800 agreement, to sell an American company in San Antonio.
I'm giving them a little background.
Yes, sir.
I'm trying to lead up to a question I want to ask.
Excuse me, sir.
Some hardware company will be at the other end of that 1-800 call.
An American company.
An American company.
Yes, sir.
There's any number of services any number of American companies could sell through that 1-800 number.
In America.
In America.
Yes, sir.
Can, in America, you have 1-800 collect. Anybody can sell long-distance services in America through a 1-800 number that they own. I own this 1-800 number that I bought from MCI, and I can sell long-distance services in America.
I don't think so, sir. I think that the FCC says in America that if you are going to be what I would say you're describing, which is a switchless provider of long-distance, that is, you don't own equipment, you buy time from one of the large carriers and resell it to provide long distance, you have to have a 214 permit. So if you had a 214 permit to engage in that telecommunications service in the United States, you could do it. If you were selling hardware over that 1-800 number, you don't need a 214. So there's a distinction between the telecommunications service, which is recognized by the FCC as requiring authority in this country, like it did in Mexico.
Could Mexico have a law that prohibits hardware stores from selling hardware over 1-800 numbers?
I suppose that, I don't know. That's an example I'd have to think about. But
could they
don't.
Then, could they cut off, through the 1-800 agreement with MCI, could they cut off the 1-800 numbers that went to hardware stores in the United States? Because Mexico prohibits that kind of conduct.
If Mexico did prohibit that type of conduct, and if Telmex determined for some purpose to do that, and it was incorrect, then someone would go to the SCT and complain, the Mexican regulatory authority, and have that number reconnected. So, I mean, I can't imagine that would be done. Telmex is concerned with telecommunications services. I mean, there are instances, of course, where people have tried to use 800 numbers to provide pornography to Mexican citizens, in which case those numbers, when they've been discovered, have, with the authority of the SCT, and perhaps I shouldn't, this is, I think, outside the record, but my understanding that they would then go to the SEC and say, we need to cut this off. We don't want pornography to be delivered in this country. And if the person who was delivering that pornography felt like, no, you know, what I'm doing is not pornography, what I'm doing is okay, you go down to Mexico and get that straightened out. But in this case, what MCI was doing pursuant to the 1-800 agreement was not what Mr. Pullman's client was doing. It's undisputed that what Mr. Pullman's client was doing was going down to Mexico, meeting with Mexican customers and companies, marketing an international long-distance service at discounted rates from Telmex, entering into contracts with those Mexicans, by the way, which did not say they were governed by Texas law, providing them an 800 number, programming their phones in Mexico to use that 800 number, billing them for those 1-800 long-distance international calls, and collecting from them in Mexico. I don't think Mr. Pullman can seriously tell this court that's what MCI was doing.
But the service, I thought MCI was doing the same thing that LDI was doing and Access and the others at one point.
There's no evidence of that, Your Honor, and I don't think they were.
Referred to some 80 companies as well as MCI and AT&T and all of them were. That's not true?
There were many companies who were providing illegal resale or illegal bypass, such as Mr. Pullman's company was doing. MCI wasn't. MCI had an interconnection agreement with Telmex, and that interconnection agreement specified that its purpose was to allow a caller in Mexico to reach the MCI customer in the United States at no charge. That's the purpose of the 800. That purpose was abused.
But then if the American company wants to, actually the United States company, because they're all in America, but if the United States company wanted this resell the communication line at that point, why is that any of Mexico's business?
Because, well, it depends on what they're doing. I mean, if they're just selling it, I mean, first of all, it is not technically resale in the sense that they bought something.
Reorigination.
If they wanted to reoriginate that call to points outside the United States and the rest of the world to complete long-distance calls, they would have to have a 214 from the FCC, number one. Second, it's Mexico's business if that company is going down to Mexico and selling that service to Mexican customers and doing the things that Mr. Pullman's client was doing in Mexico, because under Mexican law, that is the provision of a public service in the territory of Mexico, which is regulated by the laws of the country.
Can you tell me how you disagree with the Fifth Circuit's analysis to or analogy to a shipping company?
I agree in so many ways, I'm not sure I can say it in the next 2 minutes. But in general, let me say this about the Fifth Circuit opinion, because they asked this court to adopt that opinion. First, it's bedrock law that this court is not bound by the decision of the Fifth Circuit. This court makes the law in Texas. But the procedural and record posture of the Fifth Circuit case is 180 degrees from what we have here. First off, my client, Telmex, was dismissed on a jurisdictional motion in that case. We never presented a summary judgment on illegality or Mexican law to the district court. Second, this judge in that case had limited discovery to the jurisdictional issues. So there was no discovery done with respect to what the facts were concerning what the plaintiff was doing. Next, as regards the court's decision about Mexican law, it is clear that the Fifth Circuit considered one and only one provision of Mexican law. That is the 90 regulation. You can read it, and they say the fact that there's an and there rather than an or makes what he was doing legal in spite of all of the other Mexican laws, in spite of the official pronouncements of the FCC, of the STC in Mexico, and in spite of the amicus brief, in spite of all the other evidence, and ignored the San Antonio Court of Appeals decision on what it is. Shipping has nothing to do with telecommunications. When I carry a basket of Mexican cheese to the Texas-Mexico border, and it crosses the Rio Grande, it has no relationship anymore with Mexico. When one of Mr. Pullman's clients picks up, or ATI STARS client, picks up a phone in Mexico and makes a call, he is speaking across the border. He is getting that call at a cost below Telmex tariff rate. That money, which is supposed to go to build the infrastructure, and I mean, there's no dispute that the teledensity in Mexico is one of the lowest in the world. And because of that, and because of the need My 10 minutes are up. Have I answered your question or should I continue?
Thank you, counsel.
I thank this court.
May it please the court, I'm Hubert Green. I represent SBC Communications and SBC International. This court perhaps knows at this point, the only interest that the SBC defendant served in Mexico, one was to be a 10% owner of Telmex, controlling interest in Telmex, and secondly, it operated under a management agreement with Telmex in which it would improve the infrastructure of Mexico and also prepare for the advent of competition that came in 1996 and 97. Now, the first question I may ask is, why are we here? I don't mean just El Paso, I suggest. Why are we here in a Texas court? Everything occurred in Mexico. At the center of this case is the right of Mexico to regulate its own telephone industry, the right to determine its own economic principles.
The Fifth Circuit said that's fine, but it's trying to regulate the United States markets as well.
Respectfully disagree with that. One of the principal problems with the Fifth Circuit decisions is at the start of the opinion, as you see, it took the facts and it turned them on their head. It decided first time that this is not services originating in Mexico and coming out of Mexico. Well, my goodness, this is exporting, switching service into Mexico. And it proceeds with that false characterization of the facts. Facts pretty well, certainly undisputed. It is the characterization of the facts. And what is wrong with that is that it is wrong on federal law. There are FCC decisions that we've cited in the briefs. As a matter of communications law, there is no such thing as having segmented calls. The regulatory people treat it as a single call.
How is that different from what MCI does? My understanding is that MCI reimburses Mexico for the leg of the call that goes up to the border. Is that correct? Well, and that's where I'm a little bit confused, because it seems that the Fifth Circuit said that the MCI agreement was the same thing as the LDI agreement. And tell me why.
Well, but before there was 800 service, this was not a problem. I mean, you had the person in Mexico simply had to dial the number and pay the whatever the rate was. And, well, but if reorigination is a legitimate service in the United States, so how can Mexico prohibit in the United States what's legal here?
Because the FCC has said as a matter of temporary law, will be a deference to the penalty for the law of the foreign nation. We'll talk about penalty in this case, but not the employment. They tipped it off. They said they're entitled to penalty. Those nations that do not allow retail service, they're not going to insist on that. And all of our United States applicants for 214 service, and by the way, you have to have it. That's clear. Under the law, it's free. Anyone who resales international service has to have a 214. Yes, it's legal. It's legal to give it to them.
But let me, if I could get, I'm not sure I understand the answer to my question. If a call originates in Monterey and it goes through MCI to New York City, MCI's... No, I'm not talking about what the plaintiffs did. I understand that. Let me just finish my question. Let's take a call that goes from Monterey through MCI to New York City without LDI in the picture. My understanding is MCI then reimburses Telmex for the leg of the trip that went from Monterey to MCI's switching point. Is that correct? Okay. Now, I understand. Let me get to the second part of my question. I understand. If the call then goes to MCI, it gets switched to LDI and then connected up, doesn't MCI then still reimburse Telmex the same amount it would have anyway? Well, then where's the damage to... Only if they don't go through... But the reimbursement to Telmex is unaffected. The only difference to Telmex is if the call goes directly from Monterey to New York without going through MCI. If it goes through MCI, Telmex is reimbursed the same thing, whether it's just MCI or MCI via LDI. I still don't think you've answered my question.
Yes, it is made when it's required on the contract. But Telmex is deprived of the revenues that were monitoring in New York City.
They're deprived of those revenues under the MCI agreement as well.
It would be paid for the LDI
I have a problem with that school service and the
any other questions? I have a question now. If I'm understanding your argument, the issue is not the revenue that it generates. The issue is that Telmex wants to be the sole seller of service, telephone service, to Mexican citizens. You recognize the international implications of international phone numbers, and so Telmex, in order to maintain a service that their customers want to buy, they've got to enter into some agreements that allow the phone calls to be completed in other countries, and that produces some sort of discount because of 1-800 calls, but Telmex wants to control the entry into that line in Mexico. Now, the argument, as I understand it, in my simple mind here, what you're really arguing about is a regulation or law that existed during this time that the reselling was going on that prohibited someone from building infrastructure, from having a facility, and from whatever that last deal is, exploiting the telephone service. And that was an and. Now, Mexican law clearly prohibits someone who's got infrastructure and that sort of thing and exploiting it doing business.
Concession.
The argument is LDI doesn't do any of that. It simply is exploiting. And it's arguing that it wasn't illegal during those couple of years to exploit it because it had no infrastructure, no facilities inside Mexico. The argument is, well, there's all this other law out here that otherwise prohibited that. Can you address their concern that it was a conjunctive? They had to have a number of things before they were prohibited from doing this. And your argument, no, they only had to be one thing.
Argument is it is primarily based on the law of the general means. And it is the regulation they rely upon. They select that. The regulation that says and exploit the network and so forth. And whereas the law of the general means, going back to 1940, I don't have a pocket on that, uses the conjunction or. And it is the government of Mexico operating through the SCT that construes those laws, puts them all together, and says this is not only contrary to our public policy, this is contrary to the law. And the main reason of this contrary is that here is a provider of common carrier services to citizens of Mexico operating without any permit. Where in the world is that going to happen on a legal basis? Would we permit it here? No, we don't.
Any other questions? Thank you, Counsel.
I would like to point everybody to our appendix and to the opinion from the Fourth Court of Appeals. It's item B, I believe, in our appendix. I'm just going to read this to you. Examples of these types of end users are Ford, which Mexican callers would contact on its 800 number to purchase parts, and Kentucky Fried Chicken, who would subscribe to the 1-800 so that its regional offices in Mexico could contact its regional office in the United States to provide business information. All the parties agree that the arrangement between MCI and the first type of customer was legal. Justice O'Neill.
Your point, my mind, take a little bit, is that if it's a Kentucky Fried Chicken outfit in Monterey that is purchasing the 1-800 number from MCI, these defendants
in that context say that's perfectly legal. Even though it is the Kentucky Fried Chicken outlet in Monterey who is a subscriber to Telmex's services who are now using those services. That is a clear example in the Fourth Court's opinion agreed to by the defendants that MCI could sell to Mexican end users, consumers, and subscribers.
Well, maybe you can answer my question. Is the revenue...
Not at all different.
It's no different. Well, then, where's the beef? I mean, what, if they're not protecting revenue, what are we getting at here? And isn't that what the Fifth Circuit sort of acknowledged? I mean, the Fifth Circuit said there was no revenue here, correct?
Right. And if your question to me is where's the beef, Mr. Green just told you what the beef was. Telmex was concerned, and this is a direct quote, of creating a new telecommunications business in the United States of America. That is extraterritorial to Mexico. What we do with those electrons once they cross the border, what Kentucky Fried Chicken does with those electrons once they cross the border, is not the business of Mexico. They
well,
could
but
have...
Business, but it is the business of Mexico not to sell pornography over 800 lines.
I'll agree with that, and that gets back to my example
so
of Malum in Say.
Why isn't re-origination the same thing?
Because re-origination is not Malum in Say. We're not in, it's not involved smuggling, pornography, slavery, drug running.
But whether or not it's re-originated, the revenue to Telmex is going to be the same, whether it's re-originated through 10
yes,
re-originators
ma'am.
Or
as
originally
long as,
through MCI.
That's right. Telmex is always going to get its settlement payments from MCI. They have no way of distinguishing whether MCI... What is bothering Telmex and SBC here is that someone other than MCI is terminating their traffic. From their perspective, the minutes of use that come through, and I think it's in the record, it was something like 24 million minutes of use, resulting in something like $1 billion of revenue to Telmex. They have no way to distinguish where those 24 million minutes terminated. Their complaint is MCI didn't terminate them. Somebody else did. You created a new telecommunications business. That's anti-competitive behavior. That's tortious interference. I don't mean to sound like a trial lawyer, but I get a jury question on that. And that's what the trial judge didn't give me. That's what the Fourth Court of Appeals completely missed in this question. At best, Justice O'Neill, what I began my argument with, the question presented to this court is, what happens when the foreign law comes in a shade of gray? They can't prove to you that it's black.
Let me ask you a question. I'm not concerned with what Mexican law is. You are in the country of Mexico. You're in the city of Monterrey, and you are going door to door to sell a long distance service.
Mm-hmm.
And the gendarmes come up and they arrest you. And they say, we're not going to allow you to sell that service. Give us all the 1-800 numbers that you've sold today. And you turn them all over, and they go and disconnect all those 1-800 numbers and will not permit a Mexican citizen to dial out of the country on that number. Can you then claim in Texas tortious interference against the Telmex, the business in Mexico, for having cut off your 1-800 numbers in Mexico because you had a contract with MCI that the switching would occur in Texas?
Yes, sir. I'm a Texas corporation. I'm a Texas plaintiff. I'm entitled to the benefits of Texas to protect my contracts. That's the first answer. The second
but
answer...
But the interference is because Mexico, as a matter of government policy, has cut off the line you want to meet.
If the SCT sued me in a Mexican federal court and got that determination, then of course that's a Mexican dispute. But the point here is that Telmex, with the encouragement and assistance and conspiracy of SBC International, another Texas defendant, didn't do that. All they did was self-help, take it into their own hands, and attempted, you heard Mr. Green say, stop creating a new telecommunications business in Texas. They were attempting to affect commerce in Texas. And it is the Texas antitrust statute that protects commerce conducted in whole or in part in the state of Texas. So yes, sir, I have a remedy, and it's in a trial court. And I'm entitled to a jury question on whether my client intended to violate Mexico law if he entered into the contracts with a view to do so. He was not given that. I encourage you to reverse the Fourth Court of Appeals and remand this case for trial. It's been a pleasure once again.
Thank you, counsel. That concludes the arguments in the second cause, and the court will now take another brief recess.
Please rise.